Wonderful. Right. This is the next installment in our series about people meeting Jesus. Last month, if I can get this cable to work. Last month, we were hearing from Sally about a woman who was healed by touching Jesus' cloak and also the story of Jairus' daughter. So Tom's going to come and read for us from Mark 8, 22 and 30. And if all things go to plan... We'll have them up on the screen.
Okay. Jesus heals a blind man at Bethsaida. They came to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spat on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened. His sight was restored and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Don't even go into the village." Peter declares that Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him.
Thanks, Tom. Stick it on the floor. That's marvellous. Thank you very much. Beautifully read. Well done. So Jesus takes the man away from the village on his own. And we see a very intimate healing involving spit, which is quite an interesting thing, as it's possibly the only thing that's maybe worse than having to wash someone else's feet. But that's a whole subject on its own, saliva. And possibly he moved him away from the village because he wanted to communicate clearly to him one-to-one. And maybe he also didn't want the big furore and excitement that would follow a healing, which often happened. And he didn't want that to distract from what was about to happen. Now, as a kid, I remember being quite puzzled by this. And I thought it was hilarious, this idea. I was told by mum and dad that spitting was a bad thing. And here I have incontrovertible proof that it's a good thing. So it's an interesting kind of healing. The second thing, as I grow a bit older, I thought, hang on, it took two goes. What's going on here? Is this a bit of a fail on Jesus' part? Is he struggling here somehow? And I remember at Crusaders talking to friends about this, and we came up with some amazing, weird and wonderful reasons why this might have been the case. It's actually really simple. Fortunately, Jesus is making a really important point to his disciples. He's continuing his teaching, and he's paralleling this man's lack of sight with the disciples' lack of insight. Now, I can well understand the disciples not really understanding what Jesus was saying at the time. I can imagine them asking each other, "Does anyone know what he's talking about? Okay, let's quit asking him questions." But he spent a lot of the last two chapters giving his disciples some teaching. He instructs them a couple of chapters back that they don't need to carry bread anymore. And then he illustrates that by feeding 5,000 people with a few fish and loaves of bread. Then he heals a deaf man who can't speak with spit. And then he feeds 4,000 people with a few loaves of bread. And then just before they meet this blind man, it seems they get a bit confused about his teaching, and they get tied up with the yeast of the Pharisees and Herod, and they talk amongst themselves, and they go, "We should have brought some bread." He says to them in verse 17, aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears that fail to hear? And don't you remember, when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up?" 12, they replied. "And when I broke the seven loaves for the 4,000, how many baskets of pieces did you pick up?" 7, they answered. He said to them, "Do you still not understand?" Again, I'm not sure reading this, I would have immediately understood either. The next time, though, to be fair, Jesus asked a question. He gets the answer right. Now, here's a map. It's a bit of background. You can see where everything's been happening here. Sea of Galilee, you can see Bethsaida there, just at the top. Now, this has all been happening. You can see Nazareth. So lots of stuff's been happening around the Sea of Galilee. Now, he walks with them to Caesarea Philippi. That's about an hour and a half's drive, so it's not immediate. But you're then heading into the foothills of Mount Hermon. Now, apparently, if you walk up there, you can see all the way down the valley, back through where they've walked and where they've been, where Jesus has been talking about the kingdom. And then you can see further down, not on this map, you can see further off then into Jerusalem. And there's a rise into Jerusalem where obviously the final parts of this story will happen. Now, this is a pivotal part in Mark. So as he walks up to Caesarea Philippi, he's saying, "Who do people say that I am?" And at this point, they say, "You're Messiah." Now, the first time we hear that Jesus is Messiah is in the first line of Mark. But if we hadn't heard that all the way through the story, we'd be saying, "Who is this? What's going on? There's somebody that's a bit special here." But actually, he's not mentioned again after the first line until this point in verse 29 as Messiah. So actually, there's a hinge here. There's a hinge point where he's on a mission kind of to talk about the kingdom. But from now on, as Tom Wright puts it, Jesus is on an out-in-the-open Messiah mission. The disciples all seem to have the problem beforehand. Who is this person? And they weren't really seeing clearly. Now, I expect we'd all like a superpower. My wife has a superpower. And before anyone says it, it's not her vast patience and calm needed to be married to me. Neither is her very, fortunately, inefficient sense of smell. It is her eyesight. Last time she had her eyes tested, she could see right down to a level where the optician said, "I haven't seen anyone who could do that for years." So she has excellent eyesight. And now, can anyone see what's on this? This is an illustration of what she was able to see. Can anyone see what's on there? It looks like a load of twigs. That's all I could see. So there is here, just up there, above the cross bit there, there's a tiny little crocodile. And she spotted this from about 20 meters away. Now, don't panic. This isn't Oldbury. You can safely walk your dogs. I mean, the locals might get you, but the crocodiles won't. This was Australia. And we were on a boat in the middle, and she could see this thing, and only because it moved. I'm not sure I can see it myself entirely, but it's there. So seeing clearly is a thing we all pursue. We use the expression "I see" as a synonym for "I understand." Now, I've deliberately taken my glasses off, so you're all slightly blurred. Now, that gives me the impression that you might still be awake and even maybe listening. So I can't see everything that's in front of me. How much do we miss that's in front of us? Now, I'm going to do a little, going to run a little video for you. All I would say is just follow the instructions and see who gets the right number.
This is a test of selective attention. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the basketball. How many passes did you count? The correct answer is 15 passes. But did you see the gorilla?
So I could do a straw poll of people who did see it and who didn't see the gorilla, but it's usually most people don't see the gorilla because they're looking for something else. And it's an illustration there that the disciples were expecting a Messiah who would get rid of the baddies, rebuild the temple, and restore justice. And they had a very different view maybe to what Jesus had of what Messiah meant. So regularly they would ask him the question, "Where'd you get your authority, wisdom, and power?" And they were looking, though, as I say, for a different type of Messiah. Now, we know who Jesus is. We've read this story probably countless times. We know he's God. We know he's Messiah. Peter says he's Messiah here. Now, what does Jesus say himself? So for those of us, the Bible's been called a hyperlinked document. So for those of us who aren't digital natives, a hyperlink is when you're reading a website and you see a word or text that's underlined, you click on it and it takes you somewhere else. So if you clicked on Messiah in this verse, it might be that he takes you to Luke 4, where Jesus reads from Isaiah 61. It says there, he went to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. And he has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue was fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." I mean, that's a real wow moment, I think. But all the way through Mark, this is at the beginning of Luke, but all the way through Mark, he's kind of kept under wraps. So beforehand, it's not quite clear who he is. And like the blind man said, like trees walking around, I can kind of see something. Right here, we see him revealed clearly. As I said, it's a pivotal point in the Gospel of Mark. From then on, they think they know who Jesus is. And then Jesus spends the rest of the time trying to explain what Messiah really means. So they think he will rebuild the temple, defeat the enemy, bring God's judgment. Indeed he will, but not the way they thought that he would. So very simply, a man got to meet Jesus and got to see him with his own eyes, something I'm sure we long to do. And those living in the story then, or reading it, or hearing it now, are challenged, I think, as Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" I think it's also worth asking ourselves, we've got a moment of reflection after, when the band come back up again, where we can maybe ask ourselves, is there things that the Lord wants us to see that we can't because we're looking for something else, or expecting something else? So very finally, right at the heart of the story, as I said, somebody gets to meet Jesus and is never the same again. Final word about spit and how that, and that conversation in that sense. Saliva, interestingly, was seen as something with healing properties. So when Jesus takes the guy away from his friends in the village and he spits in his eyes, he's saying to him, "I'm going to heal you. I've taken a detour from my mission here. I'm going to heal you." And the message to that man, and I think to us here and to a world that needs it right now, is there is hope, there is help, and you are worthy of it. Shall we pray?